You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Toby Carey. Toby, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Happy to be here.
And where are you now? Are you upstate New York? Where are we talking from?
Yeah, upstate New York, just outside of Woodstock, New York, and a little hamlet called Glenford. And we're tucked in the woods here, basically. My studio, my editing studio is at home, has been for, oh, as long as I could have done it, 40 years or so.
That sounds cozy. So let's talk about what you're working on now. You've produced a lot of films, documentaries. What are you working on at the moment? I'm sure it's more than one thing, but I'm interested.
Yeah, well, it actually is more than one thing. Right now, I'm working with Linda Mary Montano, with whom I've worked for over 20 years, and we're doing a new piece together it's going to be shown as part of her show, which is at the Dorsky Museum at SUNY New Paltz, and just opened. And so she and I are doing a piece called Linda and Toby Make a Tape for the Dorsky, and it's part of a series of tapes that we've done. Linda and Toby Make a Tape, Linda and Toby Make a Political Tape, Linda and Toby Make a Tape About Death, and now Linda and Toby Make a Tape for the Dorsky. So that's one project, and that's a lot of fun. It's always fun to work with Linda, and she always gets me going, so I like that.
Great. Well, I want to talk more about that project with Linda, but tell me the other things that you're working on as well.
Well, I'm working on a documentary. You know, I do a lot of history, local Catskill Mountain and Hudson Valley history documentaries. I have for about 18 years now, really kind of concentrated on that and my more, if you want to call it, commercial vein. And I'm doing one on a topic that's close to here. Another one's called Tight Lines, and it's called Fishing in the Esopus Watershed, which is a very famous trout stream, the Esopus Creek, and it's a main reservoir for the New York City water system called the Ashokan Reservoir, and then the Esopus filters back out of that and makes its way to the Hudson. So there's a nice stretch of terrain, and we're talking about the cultural and angling history of the area.
Well, that sounds fascinating. And so before we get back to talking more about your work with Linda, in that current work, how is something like that funded, if you don't mind me asking? Your work, a lot of it sounds like it's, outside the mainstream, of course. How does this work get funded? Is it through grants or film seems like one of those areas that, of course, needs funding. How do you manage?
Well, it depends on the project, really. This project, like a lot of my local history projects, I basically have funded with sweat equity, except for a few things that I couldn't avoid paying for, and some professional help here and there. But I have my equipment base, and I have my editing base here. So, and I've done a lot of one-man band production work for 50 years now. So I do as much of the production tasks myself as I can. Yesterday we were shooting an interview, so I set up and ran camera. My production partner in this case is a photographer named Mark Lodi, and he has a studio where we lit the person we were interviewing. So that was relatively easy setup. And that will feed into the rest of this documentary. So we spent a lot of time on the creek with various fishing guides and various folks, and we'll build on that. But I do as much as I can myself, and if I keep it local, I don't have a lot of expenses, really. I'm 77 now, so I have some years behind me doing this kind of thing, and I don't count on this for income. I count on this as the kind of work I want to do, and I try to do as much of my own kinds of work as I can. So it's not always possible. I do get commissions for things, and I finished a film this past May, which was a commission about a local historic figure, a Converso family from Spain, a fellow by the name of Luis Moses Gomez, who was one of the first Jewish entrepreneur in the Hudson Valley. So that was funded through a commission by a local historical society that runs the Luis Gomez Historic Society, basically. So things like that.
So let's move on to Linda. When did you meet her, and when did your collaboration begin? How did that start? Because I know you have a long history with her, so I'd like to talk about that history as well as your most recent involvement with her work. How did
sure.
it begin?
Well, I first met Linda when she was, I was working with a group in Woodstock called Media Bus, and Media Bus was a was the official name of the group that was called Video Freaks, a well-known video group in the 60s and 70s, and they broke up their group that was in Lanesville, New York, up the road from us here, and Bart Friedman and Nancy Kane kept the name and moved to Woodstock, and I joined them for about 4 years. We worked together, and we did a lot of cable, community access cable work funded by the Arts Council and NEA grants, and very active training people and doing lots of arts programming. And Linda was brought to the studio one day, I believe by Nancy Kane, and started doing some sketch things with us on one of our shows. Nancy and Bart's show, the Night Owl show, had a lot of things by her. So that's how we first met. And then some years later, she asked me to help her edit or re-edit one of her older pieces. And we've really been working together ever since that. So it's been 20 years or so now. And some pieces are very collaborative. Some pieces I'm really following her orders because she has a specific thing in mind. And but it's always always creative and a lot of fun.
And that's very exciting. So I want to talk about the recent work, but let's also talk about the collaborations, because that's also what I know from looking through Linda's videos. There was, what, do you remember what were some of the first ones that you collaborated with her on, where you weren't just following her editing vision, but were actually collaborating with her as a partner?
Well, let me look, think back here a little bit and see what I can pull out that makes sense of that. I mean, we have a whole list of things that we did work on together. And I think one of the first ones was something called Father Labar, which is about an exorcist. And so we did, I had to film with her, and we did that, and then make a story out of it and make something coherent. And that might have been one of the early ones. But even though she might bring me something that I say we're re-editing something old, we really do a lot of changes, and there's a lot of collaboration that happens here in the studio as we're putting things together. A lot of times she might come here with a concept, and we have to figure out how to make it work. And the tapes that we've done lately together, or one of the series, this Linda and Toby Make a Tape series, is really kind of a play on that. On that process, where she might come to me and say, "Toby, I want to do a tape about," and then we go from there. So that's kind of our working style now, very much.
And let's talk about the current project, the show that that she's having, which is a fairly large show, isn't it? Can you tell me a little bit about that and your involvement in that?
Linda's show at the Dorsky.
Right.
Yeah, life, art, and hospital, basically. It's a lot to do with her emphasis on healing and death and passing of time. And my involvement with that is, I guess, twofold. She's showing one of the films that we did together, One Love, and as part of that show. And then we're doing, as I said, we're doing this piece that we're showing at a local movie theater, Upstate Films, an independent theater here in Woodstock, which will be, we're going to put together a series of films that we've done, so it becomes like an hour and a half show, and it's, you know, it includes some of those Linda and Toby Make a Tape thing, but it also includes some of our longer pieces, like it's called Starved Survivors, which is a lot of animation in it, and we've done a lot of animation together. It's something I had never done really before working with her, taking still photographs and turning them into something that has some movement and some life to it. And Starved Survivors has a lot of that. And another one called Gandhi Dreams, which is kind of a dream state of Gandhi, and she's very involved with religious themes as well. So we've done that. And another tape called Nurse Nurse, or Pray for Your CNA, which is about healing and taking care of people who are infirm. So a lot of them end up being humorous, although the subject matter might start off less than that.
And I think I've seen Nurse Nurse, but I haven't seen the Gandhi one. Is that a new one, a very recent one, or these are works that have been assembled from the past for this show?
That's right. We're assembling bits and pieces. The show will run about an hour and 15 minutes, and the Gandhi tape, for instance, is about 20 minutes long. And that's not a brand new tape. The only new ones, I would say, that we're showing are these the series of Linda and Toby Make a Tape, which we've done over the past year. We've done these four now. So, and we're just finishing up the fourth one.
Yeah, let's talk about that fourth one in Linda and Toby Make a Tape, because it sounds like that starts off, as you said before, with a very loose idea. And then can you tell me a little bit about the process of how both of you make one? And maybe you could start with a fourth one, but how that comes together, because that sounds completely collaborative but also not scripted in the typical way, and the ideas don't even seem to be formed before you start. So can you walk me through how an idea like that starts and comes to fruition?
Sure. In the case of this one that we're doing now, Linda and Toby Make a Tape for the Dorsky, we were trying to think of what we could do that would enhance her show and bring it kind of out of the confines of the museum, and decided that it would be good to do something here in Woodstock, which is about 30 miles from New Paltz. A little different audience might come to it, and to use the movie theater and show, you know, very so often our work doesn't get shown on the big screen, at least these art pieces don't. They're on YouTube or they're in a very limited kind of setting. So we thought we'd show some on the big screen this way, and so I'll put together this whole series. But she came to me, and you know, and we talked about what we could do, and we decided to do something in the same vein of the other three Linda and Toby Make a Tape series. And in this case, we decided, well, you know, we both have so much work over 50 years. It's almost endless. You know, I sent you that list, which includes some of it. Excuse me. And we said, well, we can't show all that, so let's do something that talks about the impossibility of showing all that. And so that's what this tape has kind of become, where we're...
And so that's great. So to take that further, because that's a kind of wonderful topic for artists that have, you know, all this past work. So you decide to make a piece about all this work that can't be shown. How does that develop? The two of you are sitting there talking, and how does that turn into something that becomes, to some extent, scripted?
Sure, yeah, it does become scripted ultimately. We first talk about it and kind of nail down the concept, and then the way we work very often is emailing back and forth script ideas or one-liners or what have you to kind of flesh out the idea. And if we get on a roll, we can really go through the whole idea pretty fast. And once we get into the right rhythm with it, I would say, there's a lot of repetition in these, in a way. For instance, we're talking about, when we're talking about some of the tapes we did, we mentioned seven of them, and then we go back to something in between, and then back to another seven. And then, so that repeats three or four times as kind of a rhythm of seven. And then we go into a more extended piece, which, because we want to say, well, we don't have time to talk about all these things, so we're kind of zipping through them.
And by talking about them, do you mean what's on the screen is you and Linda talking? It's a conversation?
Well, I've done a bunch of photographs, still photos, of Linda and myself against a green screen here in my studio. And I take those still photographs and I put them in a program that's called Crazy Talk. And I animate those still photos and I can do lip sync with them. So ultimately, when Linda and I have finished our script, we write it out and we record an audio track back and forth together of the script. I then take that audio track, put it into this program, put the still pictures into the program, and then animate it, and it allows me to come out with a video, a MOV file or an AVI file or MP4 file, whatever I want, of lip sync, and the still picture's mouth is in lip sync, and the eyes are doing animated things, and it becomes kind of a creature on its own out of the still photos. And then we have to mate those together in some way that makes sense on the screen and do an edit with that material. So that's kind of the process. And then
I'm glad you described that. And it does often come out that, the script or the final message, it sounds like, is consistently humorous mixed with obviously some other serious dialogue about what's happening here and the kind of body of work, but there seems to always be an element of humor between what you're doing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. We like to say it's fun and easy when we get together. So we say, let's get together and say, it'll be fun and easy. It isn't always so easy, but it's always fun. But so it's, I think that's accurate. Yeah, we like to laugh, both of us, and this gives us an opportunity to stretch in that way. Although, as you said, some of the topics might sound on the face of it like, oh my God, how are you going to talk about death now? Where are we going here?
But it's kind of wonderful to have humor in those kind of subjects, which are very difficult to address, death in particular, and our approach to it, and dying, and hospitals, to be able to put humor into it, I think allows us all to embrace it as opposed to, or at least enter into it as opposed to avoiding it altogether, which is, I think, generally what we'd all prefer to do. Right.
I agree, yeah. I mean, so that's kind of a real ongoing theme with Linda and myself when we work together. And I love it when we do it. Today we were supposed to work on this piece, but she wasn't feeling so great, so it didn't happen. So we have another schedule. And in the meantime, I'll put a version that I've recently edited of what we talked about up on a private channel for her to look at. And we'll have time to go back and forth again on it before she gets here, and then hopefully finish up in one more session. We'll see. We'll see. Sometimes it's not that fast.
I'm sorry, go on. What were you going to say?
I was just saying we're not under a tremendous time constraint. The showing is in the beginning of April, so we have a little bit of time to do this.
And to look back, finally, before I ask you the last question, this is one of the last ones, but to look back on your time with Linda as this show reflects, and of course it's part of your relationship, what's the thing that strikes you most about this? I mean, you're working with an artist who's kind of a legend to many people, and certainly in the performance art world, and is kind of an iconic figure. And you've entered into collaboration with her, and also had an intimate look at her work and how she produces work. How has this affected you or changed you? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it has affected me. It's really allowed me to not be afraid to try some things that are further, a little further out than I might have done on my own. I think we strengthen each other and we feed off each other, and that's really terrific for me. I do a lot of my work, you know, by myself in the studio. If I'm working on my own pieces, I did, you know, 40 mini docs on political things over these last 2 years. So I do that, and I'm here, and I'm working on it, and I put it out to the world. But when she's here, it becomes a whole different flavor and a whole different kind of excitement for me. And I really always look forward to it. She really is so creative that my juices get flowing very easily with her. So it's terrific for me.
And in terms of your mini docs, which we talked about at the beginning and a few times, and the one you're currently working on, this is obviously your consistent passion over the years. These mini docs, which all in many ways have a kind of activist nature, if I can say that. You're always engaged with social and political issues, which seems consistent in your work. Is that correct?
Well, that's true. I think if I were to kind of categorize my work, there is that definite social, political, community involvement, both in my day-to-day work that I've done, you know, with a lot of community media projects, and my documentaries. The historical documentaries are a little different. They're long form. They're, you know, they're feature-length docs about a historical subject, like the violet growing industry in Rhinebeck, New York, when it was the violet capital of the world. I mean, who knew? It's things like that. So it gives me a chance to discover something about the area that I didn't know about. But what I call the mini docs are these pieces that, for instance, about a political rally or a demonstration or the women's marches that were held locally or people protesting politically in the street. And those are usually 5 to 12 minutes or 15 minutes perhaps. So they're much shorter. And those are meant to get turned around really fast. I like to come home and knock those out the same day that I shoot the event. And hopefully they have some use out in the social world, you know, so they're on social media, and that's what those are for. But I've always been involved with that, and I've always been involved with community groups doing social actions as well, I think.
Mm. That's exciting. That sounds very fulfilling, and certainly great to have you make all those for everyone that sees them. I want to ask you one more question, which is my last question. What are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious what everyone's reading.
Well, I just finished a book that's called Thank You, Obama, Sarah Palin, How's Your Hopi Feeling Now? I can't remember her phrase exactly. And he was a speechwriter for Obama, and it's a memoir of his years doing that. Very funny. He's a very funny guy. David Litt is the author. I could recommend it. It's very, very clever. And I'm reading a series of short stories about Sherlock Holmes's great nemesis and Moriarty. And it's a volume of a variety of authors who have taken the Moriarty theme and writing short stories about it. So it's kind of fun. I read a lot of detective books when I can.
Toby, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. It's great to talk with you. I hope we get to do it again.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.